Greetings to our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Filipino boxing star Manny Pacquiao faces American Timothy Bradley Saturday night in a welterweight rematch in Las Vegas, Nevada. When the two fought in 2012, Bradley scored a controversial split decision victory. Let's hear what the two boxers had to say at their final pre-fight news conference. First, the Pac-Man.
Thank you so much to all the fans. Well, everything's all set. Both come. We're almost finished our training. And ready for Saturday. It's going to be a good fight. We never know. Nobody knows, but only God knows what's going to be. But both fighters were doing our best to do our job in the ring to make you guys happy and to give a good fight, to make people happy. And this fight is very important to me and to my boxing career. Of course, my opponent also is claiming that this fight is also very important. So it's going to be a very, very good fight on Saturday. So don't miss it. Thank you so much to all the fans, especially to all the Filipino people who always support and praying for me. Thank you. God bless you all.
Now let's hear from the Pac-Man's opponent on Saturday night, World Boxing Organization welterweight champion Timothy Bradley.
I want to thank Pacquiao, his whole team, man, and for coming to agreements and giving me another shot. And another chance, man, to prove to all the fans around the world that I'm a true champion, I'm a true fighter, that I'm the world champion, man. So with that said, I mean, everything's been said in the media. It doesn't really matter what we say. It only matters what we do. And this Saturday, man, it's all that matters is what we do in the ring. And we're going to put on a great show for the fans and all the millions around the world that's going to be watching. And I'm telling you, there's not going to be a soul in the arena or any fan around the world that's going to be disappointed. Man, Manny Pacquiao is basically went through hell in training camp. I'm sure he went through hell. I went through hell during my training camp to put on a great show for all the fans and the millions of fans that's watching around the world. But thank you so much. I'm excited for this challenge and this opportunity, and I definitely want to seize the moment. Thank you guys very much.
Joining us once again is our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Namdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
Namdi, we heard Timothy Bradley say that he and the Pac-Man have gone through hell in their training camps, and he's promising a great show on Saturday night for all boxing fans. Rematch, Bradley Pac-Man 2. Your thoughts?
It's a good fight, hands down. Manny won the first fight. Manny Pacquiao won the first fight easily. And I think the judges stole the fight from the fans and from Manny Pacquiao. But the second time around, Sonny, I don't think it's going to be that easy for Manny Pacquiao because the pressure is on Manny to look good, not only to look good, to prove to the fight fans and to the boxing world that after that destruction by Juan Manuel Marquez, that he can still be a force to be reckoned with in that division.
Namdi, what are Bradley and Pac-Man getting in terms of purses?
Interesting, Sonny. The first fight, Manny Pacquiao got $26 million. For this second fight, he's taking a pay cut. He's getting a guaranteed $6 million and a minimum of $20 million, which means if he walks away with $26 million, he will be happy. But looking at that number is compared to what Money Mayweather takes home, you know. The figures are really, really low. So if the pay-per-view numbers don't add up, we don't see a $1 million buy, he'd be lucky if he walks away with $20 million guaranteed.
Namdi, in the build-up to this fight, Timothy Bradley received a special visitor.
Like I always say, for every fight, everybody had a game plan. As of right now, there's not a blueprint on how to beat Floyd Mayweather. No one has found the way to break the Mayweather code.
Floyd Mayweather, who will fight next month against Argentina's Marcos Maidana. What was that visit all about, Namdi?
It was right here in Hollywood. Floyd Mayweather came to camp to check out Bradley. That's why you got to give kudos to Manny Mayweather, because he knows the move he needs to make, you know. A win by Bradley Saturday night at MGM Grand. Who do you want Manny Mayweather to fight after he takes care of Maidana? Timothy Bradley. So he knows that a win over Pacquiao, fans want to see him and Bradley tango. Then he can make a special offer. Hey, look, Bradley was only making $6 million from this fight Saturday night. Manny Mayweather can drop $30 million on the table, and you know what's going to happen. Money talks, man.
Show me the money.
Namdi, let's talk about two African fighters, Joshua Kloti from Ghana and Samuel Peter from Nigeria. First, Joshua Kloti goes down under and scores a big victory.
VOA!
Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Sonny, that was beat down, down under. When the fighter is a promoter, that means you have to kill him to win the fight. Because he's fighting in his house, in front of his family, with his own judges. You know, even one of the judges had it 115-109. That just shows you that they were about to steal the fight. He had Anthony Mundine down 5 times, dropped him in the first time in third round, twice in round 6, round 8, and round 10. In any other place, they will have stopped the fight. 5 knockdowns. Why? Because the fighter is a promoter. He puts up the money. He pays the referee and the judges. It reminds me of the 80s when the professor from Ghana, Accra, Ghana, Azuma Nelson, came into the Fabulous Forum right here in Los Angeles and destroyed the Mexican superstars in front of their family. I mean, not many fighters can do that, man.
Namdi, this win in Australia, does it resurrect Kloti's career?
Oh, yes, big time. This is a huge win. I mean, mind you, Anthony Mundine was the last man to beat Shane Mosley. He lost $500,000 putting on that fight with Shane Mosley, but he won that fight. So he was counting on a win over Joshua Kloti, who put him in position to take on Floyd Mayweather. Anthony Mundine is a big draw in Australia. This win by Joshua Kloti set him up for Canelo Alvarez. So you're not talking about $1 million or $2 million. You're looking at least $4-5 million for homeboy from Accra. Good money, bro.
Show me the money.
You're banking, man.
Show me the money.
Serious banking.
Namdi, let's talk about your homeboy from Nigeria, Samuel Peter. What's next for him?
He's going down to New Zealand for a Super 8 heavyweight tournament, but homeboy has not been in the ring in a long time. They're taking him over there because they have an Australian heavyweight in the tournament. So what will happen, they use Samuel Peter, and they steal the fight from Samuel Peter, and the Australian heavyweight will win the tournament, and they will go on. The winner of this tournament is supposed to pick up $200,000. But the big question is, what has homeboy been doing in Las Vegas all this time? If he comes in out of shape, he will embarrass himself, disgrace himself, and that will be the end of him in the fight game. He has no business going into a 3 or 4 round Super 8 heavyweight tournament. He's a former heavyweight champion. You know, he should be in the mix with all these lazy fat guys. So in a tournament where they will steal the fight from him, that will be the end for Samuel Peter.
Namdi, it's been a few years since the great heavyweight champion Smokin' Joe Frazier passed. And now it looks like he'll finally be honored properly in his home city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Tell us about that.
Sonny, I remember your visit to Philadelphia to meet with Joe Frazier when he was alive. And what really touched me was what you told me, that he lived above the gym.
Yes.
In his final days. And that really, really hurt me. You talk about Philadelphia as a city of brotherly love. City of brotherly love. The city of where great fighters like Joe Frazier made the city what it is, has Sylvester Stallone's statue right there, whereas the man that went 15 rounds with Muhammad Ali with 2 great fights got nothing to show for it. Finally, Bernard Hopkins, a Philly fighter himself, and Golden Boy Oscar De La Hoya, they'll put up the money to erect a statue for Joe Frazier. Smoking Joe Frazier must be honored, whereas we can go up there and look at Sylvester Stallone from Hollywood with his hands raised up, and people come out and look at that every time. That's just a slap to in the face of boxing. way overdue. We can honor Sylvester Stallone and all the Hollywood nonsense, but come on, man, this is the warrior that went toe-to-toe with Muhammad Ali, former world champion, one of the top heavyweights in the world. We must salute him.
Namdi, here's a Sunny Side of Sports salute for the late, great world heavyweight boxing champion, Smokin' Joe Frazier. Joining us once again from Johannesburg this evening is our African football guru, David Legg, who says South Africa's national team coach could soon be on the chopping block.
National coach Gord Nicholson. Now, his contract is due to end in August, and it's highly unlikely it'll be renewed. He's had a number of disappointments. First of all, it was the Africa Cup of Nations, which South Africa hosted in 2013. The mandate for him was to reach the semifinals, but he only reached the quarterfinals. Another mandate was to qualify South Africa for the World Cup in Brazil, but he didn't even make the playoffs. For the African Nations Championship just a few months ago in South Africa again, the expectations were that South Africa would certainly go far in the competition. South Africa did not even make it to the quarterfinals. And this was a competition many South Africans felt that Iggeson should have led his team to the gold medal. And then, Sonny, I felt a final chance for Gordon Iggeson to sort of get out of a corner he had painted himself into. And that was the friendly game against Brazil. But unfortunately, Neymar came. He was in superb form. He scored a hat-trick and Brazil won 5-0. So I think that was the final nail in the coffin. But, Sonny, what is really affecting Iggeson at the moment is a probe into accusations against him. He is alleged to have taken instructions from certain football agents regarding the composition of the South African team. And even more seriously, he is alleged to have incited the South African players to go on strike if they did not get an increase in their bonuses. Now, there's a probe underway, and the results are due by mid-April. And clearly, if Gordon Iggeson is found guilty on probably either, never mind both of those charges, I think he will part ways immediately. So there was a certain irony, Sonny, when I went to Soweto for the announcement by Iggeson of the South African team to tour Australia and New Zealand at the end of May, because Iggeson named an 18-man squad. But come the end of May, when they play in Sydney and then later in Auckland, he may not even be in charge of the national squad.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Shout out for my Voice of America engineer this evening, Sule Terawale. Kick it, Sule!
Kick it!
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Oh, Africa, where?
This is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
I'm very, 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 very excited. Ni chabulile. Hola.
Cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
Hi, I'm Segun Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports, from the Africa Service of the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game on!
Game on, sports fans! As we look forward to Sunday's London Marathon, the energetic Andy Edwards caught up with a Kenyan who won the big race in the British capital 25 years ago.
We are talking with Douglas Wakihuri, who won one of the great Virgin Money London Marathons back in 1989, first Kenyan to win at London in an epic race. And Douglas, in his career, won a world title and one of the world's best marathon runners. What are your memories, Douglas, of that win, the crowd, the day, the spectators, the other elite runners? It was such a tough race.
Yeah, well, I think all the best races in the world are tough, with a good field of athletes being assembled to just try and see how better we can run the 26 miles. But apart from that, I think the crowd of London was great. Of course, sceneries were as beautiful as they could ever be, and also I think is also London itself is a material that was or has become the reason why Kenyans have been able to dominate the marathon world, and that's being the first one to win. I think we had a gap of about 15 years before even Saruto won again, and then after that you have had a sequence of runners coming in. I know this year we have the top Kenyan athletes who are participating, and apart from that I think we also have High Excellency Mrs. Margaret Kenyatta, who will also be participating in a different cause. Yes.
Tell us about that cause, a charity, and you've been helping the First Lady prepare for her first marathon. Tell us more.
Yeah, I think it was just like a small dream, and naturally what comes in Kenya is we can run. And I think adapting that was quite a challenge, and also determination and inspiration to the 40 million Kenyans who are watching her, and obviously the world. We started with walking, and we came up to running up to 3 days up running and 1 day off. We came to 4 days running, 1 day off. And having a background of a non-starter in her life was something that probably is very challenging to most of us, but she was very determined, and there was no any other better way to do the Beyond Zero campaign except running as a Kenyan. And so far we have done very well. I think she ran her first half marathon in last month in March 9. And she ran in 3 hours and 35 minutes, having done like about 2.5 months of training, which we covered about 95 kilometers of the whole total distance.
So Beyond Zero, the aim of the charity, what is that?
Beyond Zero is for the maternal health care to save mothers and children. And I believe as a sporting world or a sporting country, we'll need to bring up many young athletes. And I think that will be a good platform for to see that every child who is born in Kenya survives. By doing so, she's going to buy 47 mobile clinics, which is going to go, each county in Kenya is going to have one mobile clinic to be able to help those mothers who live quite a distance from the hospitals, the main hospitals, and see how we can save lives.
Well, that's a tremendous cause. Just thinking about your own career, was winning London the peak? Because just thinking in 1999, the year before, you'd finished second in the Olympics. So when many thought that you were the favourite, so did that spur you on when you ran London the year later?
I think missing the Olympic gold medal was a huge backset. And the only way to uplift myself was basically to win the London Marathon. And that gave me confidence that I'm still quite good, because after London, I went on to win the 1990 Commonwealth Games in New Zealand. And the same year, I also won New York Marathon. And then I had a gap of 4 years to come in 95 to win the World Cup Marathon in Athens, Greece. So London Marathon has been at least the peak and also the key, the starting block of what I was capable of doing. And also it opened my way of looking at the distance running and the training, and also appreciating what has never happened to me, rather to see what is coming forward.
From your perspective, has training changed much? It's obvious that anybody who wants to be a top-class distance runner has to do a lot of running. But has it changed from your peak of 20-odd years ago to what you see the present-day Kenyans doing?
Yes, it has changed a lot, because in our times, if you look at our times, like I have 3:54 in the 1500, and I think I have 27:59 in the 10,000 meters, and of course 13:24 in the 5,000 meters. Now we have about the athletes who are coming up are running up to 12, below 13 minutes in the 5,000 meters, and they're a little bit quicker. And what I see that has changed in the distance training is the way we used to train, like rather than doing the long distance, the LSD, which is actually the Arthur-Lydia type of training, we have mixed the long and the fast speed training together. So Kenyan athletes are doing more of a shorter distance, but very fast. That means you have less time to do the speed work and less time to do the longer distance. So they are fighting there, and they're sure that if they hit the racing timing within that, like for example 35, 38 kilometers with the race pace, I think they can do better.
Do you think the world record could go in London on Monday? On Sunday? I'm getting ahead of myself, but do you think the world record could go?
Well, yes, I think anything is possible this hour. I think we have probably one of the best pacemakers, himself being a world record holder. So I hope he can take the team through. And I hope the team has a spirit that they're looking up to the world record rather than individual winnings. Anything is possible, but I wish them all the best, and I hope to see that hopefully we can get a new world record on this Sunday.
Well, Douglas Wakihuri, thank you very much for talking to us, and all the best indeed to Kenya's First Lady, and with your support of her in the race. Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome.
The energetic Andy Edwards also caught up with an athlete who is quite familiar with British football fans. Once again, here's Andy.
We're talking with Michael Owen, England striker, and he's now going to be making an exploration into the unknown in the Virgin Money London Marathon 2014, running his first marathon. It's very different. Your assets were all about speed and sharpness in the box. This is 26.2 miles. Has it been a big adjustment?
It has been a big adjustment, yeah. It's as you rightly mentioned, all my life has been about explosive speed and repetition of speed, and then resting in games, walking, sprinting, exploding into life, and that's been it really, and that's what I've trained for. So this is totally foreign, totally different way of training. But I think my body has certainly adapted over the last few months to doing what I'm doing. I just hope it adapts back when I finish, because I wouldn't mind kicking a ball around again in some charity matches and things like that. So, but anyway, it's been great fun and probably in good shape to actually run it now.
And you were getting some tips earlier today from someone who likes football himself, Mo Farah, who's got, dare I say it, somewhat more serious ambitions on Sunday. Any good tips from Mo?
Well, it was funny because he was trying to ask me loads of questions about football and I was trying to ask him loads of questions about his sport. So we were fighting to get a word in many ways, but there's a lot of overlap in terms of obviously peaking at certain times and diets and different things like that. And it was, he certainly given me a couple of tips, but I think they're probably wasted on me. Whether I do 4 hours 45 or 4 hours 47, it doesn't really matter. I'd gladly give him the extra 1 or 2 minutes that are going to boost his chances, because wouldn't it be great if he went and run a big race and even won it? I mean, it'd be the roar of the crowd would be absolutely fantastic.
You're running for a great charity. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'm running for three charities, in fact. Manchester Royal Eye Hospital, who obviously do some great work in improving people's sight. Prostate Cancer UK, who again, I've had experience from my father that had a skirmish a couple of years ago, but is gladly all clear. And then the final one is one that I've not had any experience personally, or certainly family-wise, but had a lot of visits when I was at Liverpool. I used to go to Alderhay Children's Hospital in Liverpool, visiting the kids throughout the year, certainly at Christmas when all the team went as well, and you know, spent probably 10 years doing that. And you know, you can't do it so many times and see so many sick kids without having a sort of a lifelong impact on you. So they're the three charities.
Yeah, has that given you an extra motivation to get out? Because it's not easy committing yourself to the training for a marathon, let alone doing the run.
Yeah, I think the running at the end of it will probably be the easy bit, even though that's a silly thing to say. It's, of course, it's going to be hard, but if you want to do it to the best of your ability in many ways, then the hard bit is the day in, day out, the diet, the strictness of your training regime and everything else like that. And yeah, I mean, there's been times where it's obviously hard, it's emotional, it's all kinds of wind and rain and everything else, you know, sore muscles. And so yeah, it's a real commitment. It's almost a commitment for a good few months, and I've had to adjust my sort of schedule and life and everything else to find the time to show it the respect that it deserves, really, because I want to do it properly if I'm going to do it. So it's it really is a challenge, and I'm really looking forward to Sunday now.
Wish you all the best, Michael Owen. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, energetic Andy Edwards, for your very nice interviews ahead of Sunday's London Marathon. And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America engineer Sule Tarawali for his technical support of the program. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.